fantasy sports fans, and welcome to the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. I am your host, Chris Mitchell, and we are going to be talking Week 9 fantasy football here today with our guest from RotoExperts.com and the Fantasy Sports Television Network, George Kurtz. Lots to get to this week. We're going to talk about Week 9. As I said, we're going to look at the good and the bad matchups. We're going to look at the flex considerations. We're going to look at the DFS, Daily Fantasy Football. Todd Gurley, he's been a monster. Of course, you're starting him in yearly league. That goes without saying. But in daily, that's one of the things that's so great about daily is that value matters. Not just whether a player is good or not. You need to find value. You need to work within a budget. And so is Todd Gurley. He's been a monster all season. He's a must-start, as I said, in yearly and weekly leagues. But is he a great start against the Saints? You look at the Saints defense, you think, wow, everyone is just feasting on the Saints. This team can't stop anybody. And against the wide receiver, they're atrocious. But if you look real quickly down at the Saints, they actually are pretty good against running backs. They've only allowed 5 touchdowns, 1 receiving and 4 rushing. They only allow 18.9 points per game. Now, I didn't look in depth enough at the Saints this week as far as their schedule and what running backs they faced. But the fact that they are at the top 5 in lowest points allowed to running backs, they've only allowed 353 rushing yards. Now, again, that could be because everybody is passing on them. And that's going to change with the Rams. The Rams are going to pass on them, of course, but they're also going to pass to Todd Gurley. So maybe other teams have been passing to their wide receivers and not fully utilizing their running backs because they didn't have to. That could be an explanation why the Saints score so well against the running back position. But even if that is in fact the case, that's still a lot. They've only allowed 663 total yards to running backs from the line of scrimmage. We're talking receiving as well as rushing combined. That to me looks that just looks too good to be purely based on schedule or purely based on the matchups and who they played this season. That's just a really low number. It stunned me. It caught me by surprise when I was writing my weekly article over at rotoexperts.com, and I was going to actually include Todd Gurley in my weekly trending and noteworthy article, and then it's just I had to squeeze players out and I had to find space, and talking about Todd Gurley's DFS value just didn't seem like it was as important as some other things. So it fell off the list. But it seemed like something to talk about today with George when we get going here on the program. Another topic hopefully we'll talk to, I like to ask all of my daily fantasy sports experts, who's the quarterback you're going with this week? I've come to the conclusion, and I think most DFS people have too, is that you need that high-scoring quarterback. In yearly leagues, there are so many capable quarterbacks that you can just – I mean, Mullins, I think, went at 3 touchdown passes last night, and he was an undrafted free agent going into this year, and no one would have ever thought that he would ever – no one even knew who he was. But if you're a family member of him and you actually knew that he was on the team at this time, I can't imagine anyone actually thought to start him other than desperation. And actually, Georgia did start him in desperation last night and probably got a lot more out of him than he ever would have expected. So he got a really great deal. But in DFS, you really need those touchdowns from the quarterbacks in order to score, and at least in cash leagues. And so I want to ask George, which of the high-end expensive quarterbacks is he going to pay for in order to do that? We'll also look at some of the flex, stardom, sit-em questions. You got a lot of interesting matchups. We'll get into the matchups a little bit, and then we'll see which players are stardoms and sit-ems. One of the guys that I wrote up this week was Devin Funchess. I think he's a trade target. Not because I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's actually been pretty he's been disappointing. Let's put it that way. Coming into the league, I think he was expected to be not a star player, but a pretty good one, at least a wide receiver too. And he's been relatively mediocre. And when you have Cam Newton throwing your ball, that's probably not a surprise. But he's got an extremely friendly schedule the rest of the way. And so I think you got to be targeting him both because he's affordable and because when you've got really good matchups, if you can get them at an affordable price, you want to take advantage of that. And that's really what daily is about. You look at the good matchups and you see who can exploit it. Devin Funchess isn't exactly a great player, so he's not going to have a monster day, I wouldn't think. But he could be one of those guys that because of the matchup, he goes from being a sit to a start, or a mediocre sit to a strong start, or a really possibly good value in DFS. So we'll get into some of those kinds of things. And if we've got time, I want to ask George about the trade deadline. Who are some players he likes? Who are some guys he's selling, buying, sell high, buy low, things of that nature. So we'll get into all of that Hopefully in this program, we're going to go to about 11 o'clock Eastern time here on the East Coast. So about 25 more minutes here in the program. We'll bring George in. If you want to follow me on Twitter, at CJMitch73, you can read my content over at rotoexperts.com. You can talk on Facebook with me as well. It's the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. But let me bring George into the program. George, great to have you back on. We talked some football a week or so ago, and let me get some of the crucial stuff out of the way before we actually get into the football stuff. What did your daughters dress up as for Halloween? Did they go as football players with pads? Were they man cave participants? What were your daughters going as this season?
My oldest daughter went as a llama. I don't know where she came up with that, but she went as a llama. And my youngest one went as a unicorn. I think originally she wanted to go as some Fortnite character or something like that, but I guess they couldn't find the costume. So a llama and a unicorn. But it's all good, man, because they brought home the loot. Got my Kit Kats, got my Twixes, my Milky Ways. So, it's all good.
What was the worst candy that they brought home? That candy that you're just going to deport right into the trash. We've been hearing a lot about candy corns online, and there's the Necco company makes these terrible sugary mints. They actually just went out of business in the last year or so, but they made this horrible candy for years. What's the worst candy that they brought home that, even though it's sugar and we all love sugar, you're just not going to touch?
Oh, there's a lot of them. They didn't get any candy corn. I have to go through my youngest daughter has a peanut allergy, so I have to go through all the candy to make sure there's no peanuts in there. They didn't get any candy corn, but I don't like sweet tarts or anything like those the kind of things, those chalky little things you get. I don't even know what they the hell the names of those are, but I don't like anything like that. But if they do, I don't care if they do. It's all about me, Chris. All right, it's all about me. Listen, I'm going through the candy. Like I said, I'm taking out the Twix, the Milky Ways, the Kit Kats, Reese's Pieces. That's just great. You know, though it has a peanut allergy. Sorry, can't have this. All for me. So it's all good. And anything I don't like, and I'll tell you, a lot of parents do this. You know, we get home by 6:30, 7 o'clock. Anything they can't eat or they don't want, that's what we're giving out to the other kids who come to the house now. you just re-gift. Oh, well, we don't like this. Hey, I'm enjoy. Fine. Give it out. You know, it's stuff like that, and I'm not the only parent who does. That's why I don't want to hear it.
I am all on board with regifting. Last Christmas, my brother's a beer fan, drinks plenty of beer, likes the craft beers and all the different specialty beers that you can find from all these different places. Now it's become kind of the in thing. It's kind of like yuppies used to love wine. Now I think the new yuppie thing is beer, and we hear a lot of Peter King used to talk about beer a lot way back when he's in the early days of Monday Morning Quarterback. Now everybody seems to talk about beer. So we bought beer for my brother for Christmas, but then as it turned out, we couldn't go down there. I was supposed to travel to Virginia to spend Christmas with his family, and we couldn't go. So I just regifted the beer to my cousin. I told him that I got it for him, which was not true, but I told him that anyway. Regifted him the beer so it didn't go bad because I'm not much of a beer drinker myself. So I'm all in favor of the regifting in maximizing value. I'm all board. And I'm on board with those candies as well. Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Kit Kats. Those are definitely my Twix. I love Twix. Those are my favorites as well. Let's transition a little bit into football before we get into fantasy football. Monday night, Patriots versus Bills. That was an ugly game. The stadium looked dark. It didn't look welcoming. It didn't look like a professional event. The game itself was pretty heinous. Lots of field goals, not a lot of quality performance. The Patriots look bad. Then you see San Francisco versus Oakland and another ugly one. And I've been talking about this for years, and you've heard me rant about it and then how off the rails I get. I understand why CBS and Fox in the Sunday night football game, why they get really good games. I mean, they're the core of the NFL dollar. But Monday night is a primetime game, and Thursday night is a primetime game. And especially with the Thursday night game where they're trying to sell that package, and it seems like they're not having a lot of success because CBS had it and got rid of it. Fox has it now. We'll see whether they want to invest in that long term. I mean, they're going to have a Thursday night game, but it might end up being on the NFL Network, which is what I don't think the NFL wants to do. I think they want to put it on one of the major networks and have one of the major broadcasts. It's a primetime game. And yet the primetime games, other than the Sunday nighter, which is always a monster game or almost always a monster game, the Monday night and Thursday night primetimes, they seem to be as primetime as you get, and yet they're always the worst matchups. Does this make any sense to you, or do they are they just stuck where they have to give the major networks the games they want on Sunday afternoons, and then the Sunday night game, as I said, that's always a huge game. That's probably the best game of the week, a lot of weeks anyway. Why is the Monday night and Thursday night games, why are they so bad? Why do we get all the duds? It's almost never a quality two-team. I mean, sometimes you'll get a Patriot versus a bum like the Bills, or you'll get, you know, the Rams against or whatever on occasion. I mean, you'll see a good team, but you rarely see two really good teams. Does this make any sense to you? And it can't be a fluke of scheduling, because this is consistent, and I've been talking about this for years. ESPN on Monday night just gets the shaft over and over and over again. Does this make any sense to you, and should it change? I mean, I'm just curious about this.
Well, listen, scheduling in the NFL, does it really make sense? No. I mean, you're going down a rabbit hole here. First off, the reason why the Thursday night games are bad is that every NFL team has to play at least one primetime game. All right, so you have to get everybody. So you're going to get the Cardinals, the Jets, bad teams on these nights, the Niners. They might get more than one, but they all have to have one. And generally, they're going to get stuck on either Thursday or Monday. The reason for that is that NBC pays a premium for that one game Sunday night. So that's why they get their flex schedule, where they can flex the game out. So theoretically, they're never going to have a bad game. Now, granted, NBC, we see they'll take the Cowboys anytime they can get. And they don't care the Cowboys. The Cowboys could be playing your local high school team. They'll take the Cowboys because that's ratings. You see the Patriots will go the same thing, ratings. That's all these, they want to tell you they want to see a good game. That's BS. They want to see ratings. So the teams that draw ratings, your Cowboys, your Patriots, Steelers, Packers, those teams you're going to see on NBC a whole lot for that reason. And like I said, Thursday night game, that's by far the redheaded stepchild of all this. They're getting whatever game's left over. That's just what it is. Part of it's on NFL Network, so it's the NFL's own network as it is, so no big worry there. As for ESPN, yeah, they do get the shaft. This is not what ABC had all those years, 70s, 80s, 90s, when it was the game of the week. The Sunday night game is really the game of the week now. ABC, they get better than Thursday, but not what Sunday night is. They really get, you want to call it leftovers, sort of that. Because remember, Fox and CBS on Sunday, they're paying a premium too. So they got to get their share of games. And let's face it, I know we want the nice games in prime time, but you get those Sunday afternoons. I mean, not for guys like you and I, who are going to watch all the games anyway. But, for regular fans, and there's not a good game on, they get disillusioned a little bit. And this is the second straight Sunday where, okay, we got the Saints and Rams, 4 o'clock game. The 1 o'clock game, a good game is Pittsburgh-Baltimore. Everything else is sort of blah. There's not much out there. And I think part of the problem for the NFL right now is they have too many teams that suck. It's just bad. And we're seeing tanking coming to the NFL now. Teams like the Raiders, Giants, trading away players because they want as many good picks as possible. Other teams doing similar. And that's hurting because now you get those games that no one wants to watch. They're just bad. And that's why I've always thought, when players – what Todd Gurley did last week, when he sat down at the 3-yard line, which, by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. Great for him. You won the game. You assured your team was going to win the game. I have no problem with it. But then when you come out and say, I don't care about fantasy or, Vegas for that matter, you're an idiot for saying that. Because guess what? Who's watching those games that no one wants to watch outside of the fans of the local teams? The fantasy players. You mentioned last night's game. Listening to you earlier in the show. San Fran, Oakland. Now, we were making fun of this game all week long. God, who the hell wants to watch this game? Other than your diehard Niner or Raider fan. Well, who's watching it? Fantasy players are watching it. You mentioned that I had to start Mullins on one of my fantasy teams, and I did. Yeah, by the way, I'm not some genius, by the way, boys and girls. It's a super flex league. I'm getting crushed by this week. I couldn't put a wide receiver or running back in that position, so it was either Mullins or Peterman, and I didn't make this decision until about 8:19, 1 minute before the game. I decided to go with Mullins there, because Peterman's terrible when he's playing Chicago. I didn't see any upside there. I figured Mullins, the unknown, the Raiders are a terrible defensive team. Maybe I would get lucky. I'd have been happy with half the points. He got, I think, 28 points in a 6-point touchdown lead. I'd have been happy with 14. 12 I'd have been happy with. So anything else was a complete bonus. Worked out for me great, but I didn't know anything there. So, but that's who's watching those games. We're watching the games. All the fantasy players are watching the games. All the people who bet on the game are watching the games. That's why, when athletes just don't get that, guess who's paying your salary? That's why you're getting paid all this money, because we're watching the games. Even the ones that are terrible, we are still watching. So that always riles me up a little bit. You can call us whatever you want. But we're the ones who are buying all the merchandise, watching all the games, and that's your salary that's getting paid because of it. One thing, getting back to scheduling, that I would like the NFL to do, and I don't understand why they don't. You know, the Thursday night games are unfair. You know, I don't think there's any really any doubt that they're unfair, right? Because, yeah, it's 3 days is not enough time to recover from an early in the week when you got to play the game. There's not enough time. So I've never understood. You have 8 divisions. Why not have each division have their own bye week? You know, the AFC East goes, you know, week 4 and then on and on and on. And you rotate each year, so it's fair. You know, this year's AFC East goes first. Maybe next year the NFC East goes first. You just keep rotating it. So once of every eight years, each team goes in a certain week. And then the Thursday night game, have a divisional game. You know, have the Giants and Cowboys play each other. So it's fair. They both had a bye week. They're coming off it. You know, so it's fair. No one can complain. If you want to say, well, we don't want the divisional games on Thursday nights all the time. Oh, that's fine. Then have 2 divisions have a bye week. The divisions that are playing each other. If you want to go outside, then this year the NFC East is playing the AFC South. So have week 5. Those 8 teams are on bye. I know 8 teams sounds like a lot, but you know what? You'll get rid of it quicker. We have 6 anyway, so it's not that much of a difference. And then you have the Cowboys and Tennessee Titans playing on a Thursday night game. Once again, it's fair. You wonder how idiotic the NFL scheduling is? And I'm a Cowboy fan, so it's going to sound like a homer thing. But it's really not. It just happens I notice it. And this, and Cowboys aren't the only team this happens to. Cowboys play Monday night this week. All right, play Monday night. Next week, they're playing Sunday night on the road in a divisional game, a big-time divisional game versus the Philadelphia Eagles, who are coming off a bye. So not only are the Cowboys have a short week because of the Monday night game, and are going on the road, but they're playing a team coming off a bye. I mean, if you're a gambler, you're betting on Philadelphia that night because Dallas is not—it's not going to be well rested for the game. That's what I mean. NFL scheduling—it's a rabbit hole. We can all complain about multiple things that go on here. Teams that play 3 straight road games—idiotic. Scheduling is unfair. But as for the bye weeks, I've never understood why they just don't have a whole division have the same bye week. This way, you know, it's divisional. Divisional games are important here. You know, Philadelphia has a major edge on Dallas now next week. Because of they coming off a bye playing a Dallas who didn't come off a bye. Never understood that. You know, but eventually, Chris, I think what they have to do is go to an 18-game season and 2 bye weeks for every team.
Lots of possible options. All of them would be interesting. Just to cap off the discussion, as dumb as it is, and all your solutions seem like reasonable, I'm sure there are reasons why they don't do it that way, but they all sound reasonable. And just to cap off the end of that one, not only is it a Thursday night game, but they had 2 California teams playing. I mean, one of the complaints on the East Coast is that these baseball games in the World Series start too late. They start one of the games in the ALCS, I think, was started at 8:39 and ended at like 1:33. I mean, that's the biggest complaint out here is baseball starts too late. The reason why it starts so late is because they want to get some semblance of the West Coast audience. And so on Thursday night, they start a game at 8:10, where everybody in Los Angeles or in California is sitting on the 405 in traffic. So they've not only did they schedule a West Coast team on an East Coast 8 o'clock game on a weekday, but they did 2 of them. I mean, both teams are West Coast. So if you were going to focus this game, you know, the first game of the year when they do the doubleheader on ESPN, the smart thing they do is they always have a West Coast game as the 9:39 or 10:09 or whatever time that second game starts. In the first week, it makes sense. Wow, they actually think they put a West Coast team playing on the 10 o'clock game. Of course, it's obvious, but the NFL scheduling doing the obvious isn't always the safe bet. But they put 2 West Coast teams on a Thursday night game at 8 o'clock. I mean, that's what really got me thinking is it's bad enough they had 1 West Coast team, but they had 2 in a game that starts at 5 o'clock on the West Coast. That to me just capitalized or emphasize the stupidity of the schedule.
If you're looking to reply, I agree with you. I also think eventually we will have 2 Monday night football games,
which I am actually in favor of. I don't watch. I won't necessarily watch them both. I just like sports being there. If I want to watch it, or if I want to watch 2 or 3 things at once, I just always want sports there so that, like you with your man cave. I want at least one of my TVs constantly on some kind of sport where I can just glance over at it, or if it becomes interesting, I can focus on it. Whatever it is, I just want it there, kind of like candy, just in case I want it. I know I probably shouldn't do it. I know I shouldn't spend all my time on it, but I always want it there just in case. That's what I loved about the MLB baseball package, is that if I wanted to watch a game at 1 o'clock Eastern time when no one else is away because I'm a night owl, the Oakland A's were always there, or the Angels were always there. It may not be a good game. I may not really care. I may not have any rooting interest. I just want it there just in case. And that's so for me, that's what Thursday night and Monday night football is. If I don't want to watch some other dramatic television show, or if I don't want to go out, I just want the game there just in case. And so if they go to two, I love the two games on Monday night on that opening week. So I'd be much in favor of that, even though a lot of weeks I might not even watch them. I just want them there just in case I want there. So I'm on board there. Let's get into a little bit of this fantasy stuff. We're talking with George Kurtz from rotoexperts.com. Let me get you a general question from you in general. And again, the thing about the scheduling is it seems like there are always at least a few good games. That's what kind of always struck me about weirdly about the Monday night game is that, yes, maybe although there are a lot of mediocre teams, but there are still some decent games, and somehow ESPN always still gets the horrible ones. For example, this week, Atlanta at Washington. That's probably not a game that I want to be stuck watching, but that would be better than Oakland versus San Francisco or Detroit versus Minnesota. That, I mean, I don't know if Detroit's a game, team that you love to watch, but they're having a decent season, and that's a division like you was in a divisional battle that's interesting. And there's some appeal to that that a lot of times the ESPN Monday night game just doesn't have. I mean, Dallas at Tennessee, I mean, you talked about Dallas bringing in the ratings, but who wants to watch Tennessee? I mean, Detroit, Minnesota, or Atlanta, Washington, or it just seems like those would be, I mean, Houston, Denver even. I don't know about Denver, but anyway, there are a lot of close games this week, and so I want to ask you, which of these matchups are you feasting on as far as fantasy goes? Will you look and say, all right, this is where I'm going to take my shot? If I've got a difficult flex call, which way am I going? For example, with you with Mullins, that was a much better risk than, like you were saying, with Peterman versus Chicago. Who are some of these matchups this week that you really like? And as I mentioned with Todd Gurley, of course you're starting him in yearly league. But in daily, for whatever reason, the Saints have been very good against the running back. If you're playing daily, Todd Gurley is going to cost maybe the most of any running back in the game, and it could be exorbitantly more expensive than even a Kamara or some of the other good running backs, which is some of these matchups where it's just going to generate a situation where the price isn't going to be worth it because the matchup is too difficult. Give me your likes and your dislikes from a matchup perspective this week.
Well, when it comes to daily, this has been a strange year. And what I mean by that is almost every week I've had no choice now over the past – probably a month to put Gurley, Thielen, and Mahomes in my lineup. I have to start with those and then work my way down from there. Generally, I don't like to do that. I don't like to pay all that money for three players, but they're scoring too many points. If I don't, I'm just behind the eight ball, trying to find out these lower end guys who are going to catch up. So I don't have an issue. I don't have an option here this week.
Like the Clayton Kershaw effect in baseball.
Right. This week though,
Clayton Kershaw used to be a must start.
I don't know if I trust Gurley this week either. That being said, you know, football, you can make stats say almost whatever you want them to say. And part of that reason is, once again, early in the show, you started the hit on this. You know, the Saints have only allowed 400 yards rushing all season. Well, that may be for several reasons. One, they may have played running backs who just aren't very good. Yeah, so it's a very small sample size. They've only played seven, eight games, so they may have played running backs that aren't very good. Two, they're up in games. So therefore, the running game gets thrown out the window. You know, because teams have to throw on them to get back in. So you always have to keep in mind here, you know, that it may be because they just had the benefit of a light schedule as far as running backs are concerned, and you know they're ahead in most games because of that offense. So teams aren't running as much on them. So you got to keep that in mind. Is it really the run defense, or is it really because of game flow? So I always keep that in mind. It's not that you're not going to start early anyway, as you mentioned, a redraft. But in daily, yeah, I might have second thoughts this week. Might. You know, that being said, I've said this many times. I don't know if on your program, but certainly on several others. The Rams are reminding me of the 90s Cowboys offense. And that, it seems like Jared Goff, and no matter what receiver he throws to, they're designed to go out at the five-yard line. You know, Michael Irvin did that for years with Dallas. You know, Aikman hit him with a pass, and Irvin was always out inside the five. And then Emmitt Smith runs him with a touchdown. That seems what's going on here. Same thing. This is what this offense is designed to do. You go out inside the five, Gurley runs it in. You know, not that they're doing it on purpose to build up Gurley's stats. It's just sometimes it's easier. You know, defensive backs are they're backing up into the end zone, and then they tackle the guy inside the five, and it's to the benefit of the running back. So that's what this offense is reminding me of here, which is why, you know, Goff's stats are somewhat muted a little bit, and Gurley's stats are taking off here. That be, like, but as like I said, I almost have to start Mahomes again. I almost have to start Thielen. It's what, he's got 100 yards in 8 straight games. I don't see this week stopping him any. He's not going up against Darius Slay of Minnesota, of Detroit. You know, he's a slot receiver. It's just a major advantage to Adam Thielen there. So I'm going to have to go with him again. I mean, listen, you look at the bad defenses. All right, if you don't want to go Mahomes, maybe you want to go with the number two quarterback on most boards. I think Cam Newton is 6,600 on DraftKings. You're going with Carolina against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay was a terrible, poor defense to begin with, and they've had several injuries now. I don't see how they're going to stop Carolina at home. I think Cam – I've knocked Cam for years as being a bad NFL quarterback, and the stats back me up there. But fantasy-wise, he's been great. Oh, this year, on the North Turner, he's become a good NFL quarterback. His completion percentage is up there. So almost two-thirds of those passes, 67%. So good for him. I'd be hard not to start Cam this week. I against that defense, I think he's going to have a monster game there, so I don't mind that. You'll save, I think, about $800 over Mahomes there. If you look at other quarterbacks you might like, I mean, no one truly stands out at that, but if you want to save money, and I wouldn't advise this, but if you didn't want to start Mahomes, you know, you don't want to start Cam Newton. You want to save cash to go further down here. I mean, you're looking at Case Keenum versus Houston, another poor secondary there. Houston should score some points, so Keenum's got to put the ball in the air there. Maybe you want to go that direction. I'm not saying you should. If you're including the Sunday night slate, obviously Rodgers and Brady are fine. I don't know if either defense could stop the other there. That should be a fun game to watch. But there's not a ton of streaming options this week. That's why another reason why I'll be paying up. I mean, who are you looking at? Trubisky's someone who's done well for a little while here, but it's really been – he's doing it with magic tricks because he hasn't looked all that – if you watch the games, he hasn't looked all that great. You know, and a lot of it for Trubisky is also his running ability. I believe over his last – at least the last 3 weeks, might be over his last 4 weeks, he's averaging about 60 yards rushing. That's a major advantage in fantasy when you get – because you're averaging 60 yards rushing. That's obviously 6 points. It's a touchdown. So we like that. So you keep that in mind there. But like I said, I just don't see a whole bunch of streaming options this week, Chris. So you got to be careful here as far as what you're going to do. Ryan Fitzpatrick, by the way, would be another streaming option. Outside of that one game against the Bears, he's put up fantasy gold all season long. And even Winston. You know, you can make fun of Winston all you like. You know, they threw 4 interceptions last week. Probably should have been 6. But the fantasy numbers were there. Before they replaced him, he had 265 yards passing. I mean, so you say what you want. The man put up fantasy numbers. So Fitzpatrick would be another option this week. Once again, I expect him to have to put the ball in the air an awful lot.
I did want to ask you about that. When it comes to Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's a little bit risky, but like you said, it's not as risky as you might think because other than that one game, he was consistently good. And really, he never deserved to be removed from the position. I mean, I think Tampa Bay wanted Winston in there for a variety of different reasons because Fitzpatrick really didn't – granted, he threw a lot of interceptions, but everybody had to know that was going to be the case with him in Tampa Bay. They had to know that, and yet he still had really good games. So while he's risky, he's not quite as risky as maybe you would think. How far up the rankings are you going to put him? Because there are a lot of good quarterbacks less risky than him with – slight, there aren't a lot of horrible matchups. There aren't a lot of really great defenses. So there aren't really that many really bad matchups in the NFL anymore. I mean, there are some really good ones, but it seems like there are fewer and fewer really bad ones where you said, okay, they're going up against the Jags. There's no way I'm going anywhere near that guy. Or Seattle in its heyday, you just didn't want a guy against them. Or one of the elite corners, like, all right, when this guy's covered by this guy, he just doesn't produce. I mean, there are some rare kind of isolated examples of those, but it seems like there's less of that in the NFL now. How high up would you put a Fitzpatrick up against Carolina? Is he in your top 5 or 6, or is he just a top 10? I mean, how excited, how risky do you see him being this week?
Well, it depends if you're talking, are we talking redraft leagues, or are we talking DFS leagues? And DFS, so it's all about the money. You start Fitzpatrick, you get to save some cash, and maybe put it towards a running back, maybe put it towards a wide receiver, or wherever you want to go. If we're talking, you know, regular redraft leagues, well, I mean, there are quarterbacks I'm starting above Fitzpatrick. I mean, I already mentioned Rodgers, Brady, Cam Newton, Mahomes, Jared Goff, Breeze, Matt Ryan. Don't know if I like Matt Ryan this week. It's, Washington defense is pretty good, better than expected here. So I think I might start him above Matt Ryan. But he's in that – that's what I'm trying to say. He's in that class. He's Fitzpatrick's in with Matt Ryan, Russell Wilson, Phillip Rivers, Roethlisberger, you know, in that tier of those guys there. So if I'm going to start one guy in that tier, it's going to be the cheapest guy. There's no reason for me to spend if I'll start any one of these guys here. I'm not saying I would start Fitzpatrick. I wouldn't. And I mean, I probably will. I'm going to play 15 lineups, so I probably will in a lineup or two, but not in my most important lineup, you know, my most important lineups. That I'm almost certainly going to go with Cam Newton or Pat Mahomes. I'm just not going to be able to go as far down as Fitzpatrick. It's an interesting situation. Excuse me. An interesting situation in Tampa. And what I mean is this. You got so many factions going on here. Fitzpatrick is a very good backup. He's not a good starting quarterback. Whenever he's been named as the pure starter, he has issues all over the place. But he's a very good backup coming in and to get things done. But the Buccaneers need to find out if Winston is their quarterback of the future. They got to pay him big money next year. If so, if not, they can let him go and save the cash. Now, if they don't make him the third-string quarterback this week, that means they haven't made up their decision yet, which means he's going to start at some point this season again, whether it be next week, the week after, whatever it is, he'll have to. The other factor is this. Dirk Koetter, the head coach, is almost certainly going to be fired at the end of the year. Probably should have been fired at the end of last year. So he wants to win now. He doesn't care about next year. Doesn't care about Winston, which means he wants to start Fitzpatrick. Always guarantee he wants to start Fitzpatrick because he'll feel that Fitzpatrick gives him the best chance to win now, which is true. He does. But the GM is playing the long game here. The GM needs to know, am I spending $25 million, $20 million, $21 million? I think it's 20.9 offhand for Winston next year. He needs to know now. So he needs to know about Winston now. That's why there's an interesting dynamic here. Right now, Koetter seemed to be getting his way, and I think that's because, once again, even the GM realizes you can't stop Winston after what he did last week. But if Fitzpatrick lays an egg this week or a so-so, that GM's going to want him to go back to Winston, and Koetter's going to resist. And one of it's eventually going to come down to, hey, Koetter, either you start Winston or I fire you now. Sort of that situation here. So I think that's going to play out as the season goes on as well. We haven't seen, I doubt we've seen the last of Winston, unless if the GM has already made up his mind about Winston. He's not the quarterback of the future. I don't want him. Then they'll make him the third string because they don't want him to get hurt. They have to guarantee a salary next year. If we see that on Sunday with Winston's third string or inactive, then the GM's already made up his mind.
Two quick questions so we get you out of here. Are there any big names this week that have a matchup where normally, not big as in studs, but guys that would normally be at least a must-start flex guy who maybe because of the matchup you're sitting, are there any players that strike you as fitting that description this week?
Well, I mean, you start with the first game. I mean, Chicago, Buffalo, we all rank on Buffalo. The offense is terrible. The defense is good. I'd be wary of anybody on the Chicago offense. Outside of really Terry Cohen, he's probably the guy I trust the most there. Not that I don't have him as a running back one or anything crazy like that, but Jordan Howard, Allen Robinson, if he plays Trey Burton, I'm not all on board with. I mean, you may have to start them anyway, but I wouldn't expect big games out of them at all. I mean, not at all. I like Isaiah Crowell this week against the Dolphins. The Dolphins, I think, let up 143 yards on the ground, so the Jets should be able to run so much. If you want to play devil's advocate, though, Jets don't have much at wide receiver. Dolphins have to know they're going to try to run Crowell. There may be a lot of eight men in the box there, so that's a situation you may want to watch. You think about the trades that have happened. I like Galladay this week. No Tate there. I think Detroit is going to want to build this offense around Kenny Galladay, the passing offense anyway, around Galladay. So although I know that Galladay has only had three targets in the past couple of games, I expect that to increase dramatically upcoming. Other matchups, you know, you look at the Tevin Coleman, no thank you this week, or Ito Smith for that matter. Washington's pretty good against the run. Washington's pretty good defense. Their offense may be, you know, vanilla, boring, but their defense is pretty solid. I don't like Tevin Coleman this week at all. I just don't. There's just not much there. I think they'll be able to pass the ball somewhat, but that's really about it. You know, you're starting James Conner this week, and I expect Pittsburgh maybe to try and build the offense around him this week. I wonder. You know, I own Conner in two leagues and Le'Veon Bell with him in one. This is going to be a messy situation when Bell reports. I don't know. He has to report either this week or next. And right now, I wonder if it's going to be next because he seems to want to go as late as he possibly can and still get his year of towards the free agency. But it's going to be a messy situation when he's able to play. And you may want to think about trading Connor or Bell to get out of this situation if you can get a good price for him, a fair price. Because, like I said, if you own both, and I will own both in one league, trying to figure out which one to start when Bell's ready is going to be a nightmare. I don't think they're just going to go away from Connor, but I don't think they're going to get, you know, they're not going to forget about Bell either. So it could be a 50-50, 60-40. It's just going to suck for fantasy owners. So that's the situation I'm worried about. I already mentioned I like Lamar Miller this week. I think he's going to be fine. Demaryius Thomas, I'm probably – I mean, you may, once again, you may have to start him. I don't know how deep you are at wide receiver. But I don't like him this week. I think Denver will know how to slow him down. They'll have at least some sort of idea. I do like DJ Moore in Carolina this week. I think he's a good – once again, it's against Tampa Bay. If you have DJ – it's one of these times where if you have a Panther on your roster and you're not starting him this week – why is he on your roster? You know, I can't imagine you have that much depth with six teams on bye where you could sit him. So, once again, I'd worry about him. You start every Rams, Saints, Green Bay, New England. I have to think that McCarthy is finally going to free Aaron Jones and let this man be the starting running back there. I understand Jamal Williams is better in pass protection, and I do get it. That's more important than the running game. You got to make sure Aaron Rodgers is healthy there. But Jones is just such a better player here. You would think halfway through the season he's figured out pass protection here. I do wonder this week, New Orleans, is this the week where Drew Brees finds somebody else other than Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara to throw the ball to? Is this the Traquan Smith week? Yeah, I think it very possibly could be. He's someone I'm looking at this week to have a big game. And nobody I want to start in Tennessee against Dallas. Dallas's offense is, who knows what it'll be with Amari Cooper, but the defense is good. Derrick Henry, I don't see much running room for him unless he gets into the end zone. Deion Lewis will catch his fair share of passes. He'll be okay. But Mariota, even Corey Davis, not seeing much there as far as that's concerned. So I don't know if I see anything I hate, but there are more things I'm concerned about than anything else.
When it comes to trading, I profiled Devin Funchess in my article this week over at rotoexperts.com. Any guys that you're suggesting you sell, and are there any guys you're targeting as far as buys when it comes to the trade deadline?
Well, you know, that always depends on what your team needs, you know, as far as selling, buying. There are lots of guys you could want to. Right now, I just got a little alert that Geronimo Allison suffered a groin injury in practice yesterday. Well, if Valdez-Scantling is on your waiver wire, you might want to think about going to grab him. He was a hot waiver wire ad anyway, so he shouldn't be. But if you're in a 10-team league, he very well could be. And you might want to consider putting him in there. I see lots of points coming Sunday night, so he's somebody I would want to. As far as trading, I don't know if I'm going to point out certain players. I mean, everyone's valuable depending on what you need, running backs more than anything else. But look at your roster, see what you need. You know, and when it comes to trading, you know, if I need wide receiver help, and I'm going to go call Chris Mitchell, you know, go send to Chris Mitchell an email. You know, if he doesn't have wide receiver depth, why am I bothering Chris Mitchell? You know, I get trade offers all the time, and I get them from people who are asking for a position that I don't have it. You know, it's like, what do you? I mean, you know, perfect example is in my dynasty league. You know, it's a big dynasty league. I have four running backs on my entire roster: Devonta Freeman, IR. Jay Ajayi, IR. Melvin Gordon, and Marlon Mack. So I only have two healthy running backs, all right? And they're barely healthy. And then I get the same guy. He's after Mack over and over. And he's not offering me a running back in return either. It's like, I can't play with one running back, okay? It's like, leave me alone. I can't trade you a back. Even if your trade offer is – even if you're offering me more than Mack is worth, I can't do it. I'll take a zero each week in a running back position. It's a dynasty league. There are no running backs out there. Okay, if Chris Mitchell was on a roster, he'd be taken. And but it annoys me. Whenever you make a trade, check the other team's roster. Make sure they have the depth at that position to make a deal. If they can't, you're just wasting your time and theirs. And it gets frustrating after a while. So you always do that as far as looking for trades here. I believe the trade deadline in most fantasy leagues is sometime in the next week or two. Once again, your league is custom. It could go much further than that. But this is the time to make some deals here. I can tell you, Chris, in leagues where if I'm 3-5, whatever, if I'm below 5, I'm not doing well, I'll go down fighting. The way I look at it, I'll make a deal that even if I don't love it, you know what? I'd rather go down fighting, making deals, than just go 3-7 and be done anyway. Might as well fight and see if something comes out of it. So I don't think you can be afraid to make deals. And when you're making deals, I mean, a perfect example is I contacted somebody in my home league yesterday. It happened to be where he has six receivers. I needed a receiver this week. There's no one I love on the waiver wire. Next week he'll need a tight end. I think one of his tight ends has a bye. I have an extra tight end who's on a bye this week, but we can help each other. I'll give him a tight end, which is Eric Ebron, and he can give me a wide receiver, which is, I think he had Nelson Aguilar, which I would have taken. That's how desperate I was, even though he's been terrible. But he has Doug Baldwin. He's not starting either. So I wanted to take Baldwin. And then he pointed out, well, I can't trade you Seattle's number one wide receiver. That's the other thing. Don't overvaluate your players. All right? Doug Baldwin has 14 catches for 139 yards and no touchdowns this year. Okay, he may have gone into the season as the number one wide receiver for Seattle. He's not that. Okay, he's hurt. He's a shell of his former player. You know, if you're going to be that guy who thinks all your players are all stars, they're all Pro Bowlers, well, then you're impossible to deal with anyway.
I'm actually starting David Moore in a league. With all those touchdowns he's had in recent weeks, I'm actually starting Moore, and I think I would start Moore over Baldwin. Maybe I'm reaching there, but I don't think that's a crazy idea since he scored three touchdowns in the last 2 weeks.
Baldwin has 14 catches on the season. It's certainly not crazy. I mean, and Moore, by the way, you know the deal, and you do it as well. You and I are in the Slack channel for Roto Experts all the time. I answer, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 questions a week on various platforms. Moore is a popular one. That's we're talking about David Moore, not DJ Moore in Carolina. Although DJ Moore is kind of popular too, but David's popular about start sits. It's hard right now because Seattle is running the ball more. Yeah, you know, Chris Carson, Mike Davis, even Rashad Penny now, they're running the ball more. They're not throwing the ball as much. So I don't know how lucky we're going to keep getting. You know, last week's a perfect example. Russell Wilson went 14 of 17. 14 of 17. He only threw 17 passes. We got three touchdowns. I don't know how often we're going to be able to rely on that. That's going to keep happening there. So just keep that within mind here. And, yes, I know Russell Wilson owners are annoyed. Seattle's running the ball more, but Russell Wilson is not.
Yep, and actually, people should have been preparing for this. I've always said that Russell Wilson is a better game manager than an actual elite player, and I don't know if that's right or not, but Seattle wants to run the ball. And so they didn't do it for a couple of years because Marshawn Lynch was gone and they didn't have the next replacement, that durable guy that could pound the ball 25 times. In recent weeks, like you were saying, it looks like Chris Carson is that guy. I actually wrote him up this week in my article as well. It looks like they finally found that guy that can pound the ball a little bit, and it looks like we're going to see more of this. Now, can Wilson keep throwing three touchdowns a week? I guess not. I wouldn't think so either. I'm on board with you there. But they might keep trying it. That'll hurt. Carson will get the attempts. He'll get maybe the yards. Maybe he doesn't get the red zone. That's not the greatest recipe. But either way, it makes everybody viable. But, George, thanks a lot for putting in the time today. Have a good weekend, and keep answering those questions, and good luck on the radio.
My pleasure, Chris. You have a great weekend as well. Enjoy week 9.
All right, that's George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com and the Fantasy Sports Television Network. You can follow him on Twitter, at George Kurtz. You can follow me on Twitter at CJMitch73. If you want to talk fantasy sports online, you can do it on social media over at Facebook, where we post the podcast links as well as take your questions. I actually have some Facebook questions in there that I've been answering. I like to do that on the podcast, but George only had a limited amount of time, but we actually kept him longer than we were supposed to already. So I wanted to let him go. But normally, most weeks, I do like to take your Facebook questions and get whatever guests we have to answer them. But we just didn't have the time to do it this week. But if you want to join our Facebook group and ask some questions, I do try to answer them all week long, specifically even more so on Sundays. I do definitely make an exerted effort to get to your questions on Sundays before the game time. Thursday nights, it's the middle of the week sort of, and it's tougher to get to those. And plus, a lot of times I don't have a lot of players in those games. So it's a little tougher to answer questions for that one, especially with the game starting in the evening. It's just dinner and family and other requirements and all these different things. Sometimes it's a little tougher to get to your Thursday night question. So if you ask me a question at 7:45 on a Thursday, I may not be able to get to it. Whereas on a Sunday at 12:40, more often than not, I will get to that Facebook question because I'm answering them all morning long as I'm sitting in front of the TV, watching the fantasy program, setting my DFS lineups, setting my yearly lineups. So if you want, the Facebook group is the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. Again, that's the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show on Facebook. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I can always give you the information you need there, at CJMitch73, where I post links to all my different articles, all the different places I write, as well as links to all the podcasts, so if you want to listen to that. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in this week. Again, my article is over at RotoExperts.com. I profile all the trends and the noteworthy developments. I also have a Don't Be Fantasy Fooled segment where I profile a player that maybe had a good performance recently, but you shouldn't be fantasy fooled into thinking he's more than he really is. This week it's Devontae Parker. It was going to be also Marvin Jones, and then all of a sudden the trade happened, and I had to recalibrate my evaluations, and I actually removed him from the article because I don't think Marvin Jones is all that great. I don't see him as a fantasy-relevant guy that much. And then all of a sudden, Golden Tate gets traded, and all of a sudden, last week's performance looks like a very repeatable situation because now there's one less player in the mix there. So I had this whole segment of a profile written up for Marvin Jones. I posted it to be edited, and then I was like, wait a second here. This trade just happened. I got to reconsider. I reconsidered, and I probably should have put him into the trending or the noteworthies because the noteworthies, all you need to do is do something noteworthy, and you can get in there. Marvin Jones is noteworthy because Golden Tate is gone. George had talked about how Kenny Golladay, the game their game plan may revolve around him now. But what also George said is it hasn't been recently. We don't know why that they haven't been focusing on Golladay like they did early in the season. He's got the talent. He's got the ability. It looked like they liked what they were doing going forward in the first few weeks, but they haven't. And sometimes a guy doesn't perform. Sometimes he's banged up. Sometimes he's not handling things off the field properly. Maybe he's not practicing. You know, sometimes guys fall out of favor because, I mean, not only do you need talent, but you need to do it in practice. You need to show to the coaches. You need to pick up the game plans. You need to show that you're not only a talented physical player, but that you're a dedicated player and that you can pick up the game plans and do what the team wants to do. A lot of times, a coach would much rather have a player who does what he's supposed to with much less, more limited ability than a guy with all the ability in the world, but he runs the wrong routes or doesn't make the right adjustments. That happens in New England all the time. I see that all the time where a talented receiver, he doesn't make the sight adjustments on the fly. That's one of the things that's complicated about the Patriots' offense is they see something and they're supposed to adjust. Well, if a player doesn't make those adjustments in practice and he doesn't make those adjustments in games, then all the ability in the world doesn't matter. Brady isn't going to throw it to him because he doesn't know if he's going to be where he's supposed to when he's supposed to be there. And we don't know those things in fantasy. We don't know how those things are developing in practice. We don't know the chemistry of the situation. Those things matter in the NFL. We don't talk about them. But that's the kind of inside information we need to know. I mean, we've had years where a running back doesn't play because he doesn't pick up the blitz properly in pass protection. Now, that sounds insane to me. I mean, if you just want a guy who just to run, then when it comes to pass protection, take him out. I realize that's a sign, that's a signal to the other team that it's a passing down. But when it's 3rd and 8, are you telling me the other team doesn't know it's a passing down already? So if you have a guy who doesn't do well in pass protection, that doesn't mean you have to bench him all the time. That just means you play him on 1st and 2nd down, or you only have him in there on those downs when you can do play action, or you only have him in downs when you know you're going to throw. The fact that that might signal to the other team what you're doing, they already know your tendencies anyway. So it's not like they'll be baffled if on 2nd and 9, if you have the guy in who doesn't block well, they're still going to think it's a passing down. So if you take him out, that's not going to scream red flags. They're not going to put 11 guys on the line and not even cover the wide receivers. I mean, come on. But still, a guy who doesn't know how to block, it doesn't get running time, doesn't get rushing opportunities because he's struggling in pass protection. I've always thought that that was kind of absurd, and yet that happens. Guys have been drubbed out of the league for things like that, not just pass protection. I imagine there was more going on behind the scenes than just that. But we do hear about that a lot, where a guy is struggling in pass protection, and it's left for us to assume that that's why they're not getting playing time. And that can happen with wide receivers, and we don't know why Kenny Golladay isn't getting as much run now as he was early. But either way, that made Marvin Jones a relevant player again. So I wrote up a segment, spent 45 minutes researching and writing, and then I had to just delete it. The flick of a delete button, just like that. So if you want to go over to rotoexperts.com, my article's up. It posted actually yesterday. I profiled Devontae Parker, Lamar Miller, Devin Funchess, as I talked about on the show. He's got an extremely friendly schedule upcoming when it comes to defenses and their fantasy points allowed to those players. He's got just an amazing schedule going forward. It's really kind of preposterous. He plays the Saints twice. He plays the Buccaneers twice. One of the toughest opponents he's got is Seattle and then Cleveland. But he plays the Saints, the Buccaneers, and the Falcons. He faces Cleveland, as I said, who all of those teams have allowed 40 points or more per game to fantasy wide receivers. Obviously not to one receiver. That's all receivers on a team. But when you've got a guy who's the majority, gets a fair share of that number, then there you go. You get 40 points. You've got a guy who gets 18 to 20. You know, that's a nice day. And for Devin Funchess, that's a nice number. I profiled Chris Carson because of his workload increases and the fact that Seattle game flow wise wants to run the ball a lot. So I profiled him as well. Talked about his fantasy potential going forward. I also mentioned David Moore. It's weird to profile Chris Carson of Seattle and also David Moore of Seattle, but David Moore has been noteworthy. He's got 3 touchdowns in his last 2 games. Russell Wilson hasn't been throwing the ball all that much. He doesn't have a 300-yard passing game this season. In a league where everybody's passing for 300 yards, noteworthy is a 450-yard day. I mean, even 400 yards isn't that noteworthy because someone puts up between 380 and 420 every single week. So 400, while it's definitely noteworthy because there's not a lot of them doing it, not everybody's doing it, but it's a little less noteworthy because almost every week it seems like someone is either approaching or surpassing that 400-yard marker. And Russell Wilson hasn't thrown for 300 yards yet. Not a single 300-yard game. If I remember correctly, his highest game was 278, and I believe that was opening week. And he only passed 17 times last week. But David Moore is catching touchdowns, and catching touchdowns can mean something. So I profiled him as well. And Nick Chubb. I profiled him last week. I did an update on him this week. I actually put him in the noteworthy section, but I probably should have put him in the trending because I try to break them down into where they apply. So if it's noteworthy, I mention them. Noteworthy just means that it's noteworthy. It doesn't mean that there's a trend coming. It doesn't mean that they're necessary to be the fantasy fooled. It's just it's noteworthy, and I throw it out there. Trending is when something happens enough where you can rely on it. So I put players in there for that section. And then don't be fancy fooled as a guy who does something noteworthy, but I think people will be led to believe something that isn't actually accurate. So, for example, like I said, Marvin Jones had one good game. I don't believe in Marvin Jones. I think his best days are behind him. And yet, because of the change of circumstance, I changed my mind. But if his circumstances hadn't changed, I was going to say that while he had a good game, he didn't do anything before, and I don't expect him to do anything going forward. That was my original profile until the change in circumstances. And that's the take I have on Devontae Parker. Everybody has been high on Devontae Parker forever. He's done this from time to time where he shows his potential, but he shows it in one game or maybe 2 games. So that's an example where a talented player who does something good, if you're a believer in Devontae Parker, and there are a lot of them out there who have wanted to believe in him for a long time, all of a sudden, once he starts to do what you believe, it's like confirmation bias. He does what you always thought he could do, so then, bam, you're on board. It's like, okay, here it is. This is the start. The seed has been planted. Now he's going to go on a run. He's going to be that guy I always thought he would be. That's where I say hold your horses, everybody. Don't be fooled. He's done things like this before. It's not going to change. Miami is not a team that does these things consistently. Devontae Parker is not going to go on a 6-game run like Josh Gordon did way back 5 or 6 years ago where he – in 2/3 of a season, he had one of the best all-around seasons we've ever seen. So that's where the don't be fancy fool segment comes in. And this week, that's Devontae Parker. But anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in. Again, follow me on Twitter at CJMitch73 or listen to our weekly podcast. We try to do it Wednesday nights where I go through the entire fantasy lineup. But with family obligations and the World Series and Halloween, there's just been excuses why we couldn't do the program. And one of my co-hosts, Brandon C. Williams, he can really only do it on Wednesday nights. So I've had to put that one on the back burner. And George, he's a very, very busy person. I can't take up 90 minutes to 2 hours talking football with him at any one sitting. So he's great to come on board with us for like a half hour, 45 minutes. But I can't go through every single game, flex by flex, DFS by DFS. So the idea is to go through all of the games on Wednesday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern time. We're going to try to pick that up next week, but over the last few weeks, I haven't been able to do that, but we're going to try to get back to that. But that's what I've liked to do with George, and I was doing it with Ricky Sands when it came to daily in the last this season as well, is do a shorter podcast on Thursdays or Fridays and try to do something for you for you people out there. So hopefully you tuned in this week. Hopefully you'll tune in going forward. Thanks, everybody, and have a good week. Good week in week number 9. Again, follow me on Facebook. Join our group. Talk some fantasy sports with us, the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show.